Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. I think you will. Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. We have a very special guest today. Very excited to have him on the show. It's EJ Rivera. He's a marketing specialist at Aniplex of America. EJ, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're sort of known as, I guess you refer to yourself as the Aniplex guy, right?
Correct.
Right. So you're the guy who shows up to convention panels and has people complain about prices at you. Like,
yeah. Right. I go to the conventions, I handle all the social media, so I get comments from every which way from here and there. Definitely Tiles Marketing Specialist, and yeah, everyone pretty much calls me the Aniplex guy.
All right. So when did you start at Aniplex of America?
I started in April 2011.
Okay, so it's been a little while then.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago marked my 4 years here.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And what was your life before that? I mean, were you always sort of, did you always want to get into anime specifically or just marketing?
Marketing specifically, to give you a little background on me, before working at Aniplex, I worked at a music company, specifically a J-rock company called Maru Music.
Oh, right.
And they promoted Visual K here in the U.S. So that was the origin of my route, because that was the start of, like, you know, promoting anything anime related, because we had a couple of bands that did a couple like anime openings here and there. And then that experience there brought me to get my foot in the door into Aniplex of America.
That's interesting. Like, there were like a couple companies back then trying to make Visual K a thing. And it didn't really seem to take off. Not here anyway.
Definitely. It was one of those things. We tried. Mar Music was around for a couple years, but unfortunately they shut their doors in 2011, and that's when I had to go and look for new opportunities.
Right, and luckily you stumbled on this one. So it's good.
Yeah, cool. Definitely.
So, I mean, obviously you were familiar with Japanese pop culture. Did you watch anime? Were you into it at all?
Oh, yeah. My first anime, my gateway anime, was Ranma One Half.
Okay.
I was actually in middle school at the time. And, like, funny story, I was in middle school at the time, and I was in eighth grade. And in this like astrology class, there was a seventh grader who had a video. He was fighting with a kid with it, so I confiscated it, and it ended up being the Ranma One Half OVA Anakane to Remember.
Okay.
And then I was like, what's this? It's like, is this a cartoon and stuff like that? And then they're like, just check it out, you know, you'll like it, you know. I popped into the VHS, and all of a sudden I'm like, what's all this?
Yeah.
You know, this isn't G.I. Joe. This isn't like Exo Squad.
Right.
And then it just, snowballed from there. I started asking for more videos. Then I got exposed to Dragon Ball Z. And then that's where the whole like renting videos from Blockbuster and Hollywood Video started coming into play.
Yeah.
You know, the usual gateways, Ninja Scroll, Akira.
Right. Well, I mean, if you were into Exo Squad, you were primed. You were heading down the weeb path already. Like that's a definite gateway thing right there.
For sure.
Okay, so since you started at Aniplex, and Aniplex of America has been around, I have a hard time remembering. Like, they haven't been around that long. They're still relatively new. Like,
yeah, they've been around since 2010.
Right. Okay. And they were very controversial back then, because Now, how would you describe Aniplex's approach to the physical media market in the U.S.? How would you describe it?
Okay, the physical media, for Aniplex's price model, it's not more of just putting out a product. They're trying to give you more of an experience. So instead of putting out just like a simple set, they're trying to give you like high quality, you know, something you'll enjoy, something you look back and like go look back at and go, oh man, I still remember this. This is like, this is some great stuff, you know. And that's where like all the bonus features, the extra content come into play.
Right. So it's more like a, I mean, so the thing you put on your shelf is a little bit more, it's intended to be a little more special than your average just, you know, DVD release. It's supposed to be like a collector's item in and of itself, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Right. And so like heading into the market, if you can comment on this at all, did you see like this was a need that you felt wasn't being fulfilled? I mean, was the idea to bring the American physical market closer to what the Japanese market is like and how the Japanese market behaves?
It was similar. When I started, I was really surprised about the method, because before that, I was used to Funimation releases,
right?
You know, and then, you know, my boss, Henry Goto, he's the one that introduced me to it. And then he's the one that like taught me about the whole experience thing. And it's true. We try to give like the same like satisfaction that Japanese fans get when they get their releases, but more catered towards the American market. I mean, we're not trying to release, you know, 15 volumes for, you know, one series.
Right.
We're trying to get it as like as much like impact as we can as possible.
Well, I mean, that's a capitulation. That's like saying, okay, so you are taking into consideration the differences between the two markets, but you're still doing things very differently from how everyone else does them. So, like, you're not releasing something over 15 volumes, but you are doing it over 5, which is a business tactic from 2003 here in the States. I would imagine that's working because of the strategy you're taking, which is largely – that's sort of the truism about Aniplex is you guys get a ton of complaints about – your price structure because it's expensive, but it's working. I mean, obviously you would probably characterize it that way, right?
Yeah. 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 I mean, I started in 2011, been getting complaints, and I mean, we're still getting complaints.
Right.
But yeah, it's working. I mean, it's not necessarily just the package too. It's also how we promote it. We also, with our marketing, we also try to do like special events at conventions, or also try to do like events like movie premieres, sort of like to tie the title. So going back to part of that, like the whole experience thing.
Right.
Yeah. Like we just tried our best to put it out there and like show like, hey, this is a good title. You definitely got to check it out.
And so, okay, so the whole like, well, it's an experience, it's its own separate thing, and it, you know, but it's still, you know, $50 or whatever. You're charging effectively like $10 an episode, which is way more than any other company charges. I mean, is the idea like, well, we want like that, the market that we're going after is okay paying that. Like, they're comfortable with that. This is what the show is worth to them. And everybody else who's used to paying, you know, $1 an episode or whatever it is, that's not really your market.
Well, we're not trying to like exclude anyone. You know, we believe our prices are like a good price. We feel like, because, you know, the prices we put helps us like recoup our investments, as well as like send royalties to Japan. And these royalties, like, well, we feel like these royalties will help like fund the next great show. So,
well, that's the business model in Japan, right? I mean, you sell 2,000, 3,000 Blu-rays, you break even on your show, 3,000 per volume, on your show, and then you can make another show. That's kind of the business model, right? Or is that
I mean, that's how it's worked, you know,
right.
Like keep the market going.
but Aniplex of America is gravy. It's gravy on top of that. I mean, you're not funding, like, if a show does really, really well for Aniplex of America, but doesn't do so well in Japan, will Aniplex of Japan consider making more of it?
It's definitely one of those things, like, Japan is, like, not only thinking, like, locally, they're trying to think globally, too.
Right.
If I had to think of an example, Durarara is a good example. You know, the fan base here just kept on growing. And, like, eventually, you know, when the consortium had their meeting, they saw, like, not only is it popular here, it's popular in U.S., and, you know, sequel eventually came.
So the sequel was produced as a result of both the Japanese sales and the American sales being similarly strong.
Yes. Like, Durarara was one of our first titles when I started.
Right.
And, yeah, we, like, from what I saw, there was so many fans. I remember one time there was one of my panels at a Fanime, and then, you know, someone asked us, will there be a sequel to Durarara? And, like I said, you know, one of the factors is if, like, there's a demand, you know, definitely they'll keep it in consideration. All of a sudden, that, like, next day, I see a petition, like, on petition.com saying, you know, if we get so many signatures, we'll get a sequel. So sign this now.
Yeah. Right. Doesn't quite work that way, but yeah. Well, in that case, I mean, you know, in terms of your pricing structure, if it's like, well, we're recouping the cost, we are sending royalties back and potentially funding a sequel, the shows that you release here are all generally already enormous hits in Japan. You guys cherry pick the best of the best. It's, well, not best of the best in terms of, I mean, I'm not making any objective statements about quality here, but in terms of hit shows. So, Sword Art Online, Kill la Kill, these are hit shows. They're already enormous successes in Japan. Have you ever thought, like, well, we've already made money hand over fist on Sword Art Online in Japan. We can put out, something in a price structure that's a little closer to what Americans expect, especially for a show that runs on television, mm-hmm. you know, to a more casual collector. Mm-hmm. Because so far you guys haven't done that at all. And, you know, if the idea is, well, we're still making our money back on this show, we're still recouping costs, we're still paying out royalties, I mean, is there no juncture at which you'll say, okay, reasonably priced box set for American release?
Well, the part of this is part of the, like, negotiations with
right.
Japan.
Mm-hmm.
For us, we want to put out box sets, but with these box sets, sometimes we're not allowed to, like, release the full box set unless, like, the full box set's in Japan.
Okay, right.
And part of it's that whole same region Blu-ray thing.
Reverse importation, right. I figured that must be a huge fear for Aniplex Japan, and you guys must deal with that, like, since you're just their American branch. You guys must hear about that constantly. Like, well, you know, this is still selling for us in Japan, so we're going to put it out, you know, over 5 volumes in the U.S. to limit that, to limit the blowback from that.
Oh, yeah. We hear about it all the time.
Right.
And that's sometimes, like, the limiter and stuff. So, like, they don't want to see, like, you know, they want to keep the domestic market, like, growing and not, like, the reverse import, like, you know, cutting in on the funds.
Right. Yeah. Why cripple your source of income like that? It's a reasonable thing. It's just American fans, you know, they wind up having to pay $80 for 4 episodes because of reverse importation fears. Right.
Yeah, so, you know, and that's the scary thing. That's the one thing we have to be careful of too, because if it becomes too big of a deal, it might be, you know, worst case scenario, there might be a point where, like, you know, this is becoming too much. We got to shut down the branch. And, you know, that's, like, you know, knock on wood. Hopefully that doesn't happen.
That's actually a danger for you. So if they start seeing imported sales of your product too much in Japan, there's a threat that they might shut you down.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
Oh, geez. Wow. Okay. I didn't know that.
You know, it's if it's like, you know, it's like, what's with U.S. sales? You know, yeah, what's why does it keep on going? Like, why is it being reverse imported to Japan? You know, that could be one of the solutions they think of. You know, you know, you cut it off and just concentrate more on the domestic market.
Yeah, I know that was a big deal with K-On! Like, that show came out in cheap box sets here, and it was reverse imported a lot. Like,
yeah.
A lot of people. Like, I believe the Sentai Filmworks low price box set of that, like, charted on Amazon JP, I think. Right? Which I'm sure is what they don't want to see.
Yeah. Like, when we were discussing the reverse importation, definitely that was one of the things we saw. Like, that was an example. Like, say, for example, look at the, you know, number one sellers. It's a K-On! Domestic U.S. release. We're like, oh.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. And you know, while it's understandable, from a fan's perspective, it's like, man, I just want to own the show, and I don't want to have to take out a second mortgage on my house to buy it. So, you know, their concerns are different from yours, and it's sort of a never the twain shall meet. Like, so long as the corporation is interested primarily in profit, which is their purpose for existing, it's not necessarily going to see completely eye to eye with the fan who's like, look, I just want to pay $60 for a Kill la Kill box set and have the whole show.
That's hard, especially with Amplex's model.
Right.
I mean, we're trying. Yeah. I mean, we're putting out the standard editions, which are still a little pricier,
right?
But it is less than the limited edition.
Do you feel any relief at all that now you have another company that has decided to make their releases even more expensive than yours?
Oh, are we talking about Pony Canyon?
Pony Canyon, yeah, their releases are more expensive than yours, and they have a similar episode count. And I'm curious if you guys see that as just inevitable, like you knew eventually another Japanese company would just skip the middleman and just start releasing their stuff here themselves using a similar scheme.
I mean, you know, we're glad that there's competition. Right. I mean, we're glad there's more companies coming in. That, I mean, it's just saying the market's growing. But we see them as them coming out like that is just making us more like determined, you know, to like be one above. You know, like try to find a way to sell more than like them trying to like use a similar model.
Right. Yeah. Well, you could just keep a PowerPoint slide that has the Yuki Yuna is a Hero page on it, you know, where you're supposed to purchase it, and it has that price there. You can just click to that and say like, all right, look at this. This is more than what we charge. maybe not. But so how do you currently – how would you characterize the current American physical media market for anime? Like would you characterize it as growing, steady, declining? I mean how would you paint it?
I would say it's steady right now. A lot of fans are streaming now.
Right.
And after streaming, you know, they get the satisfaction. So we're seeing it more, the market who wants to buy are the ones who really want to buy.
Yeah.
And, when I first started, like I was a little concerned too, especially after Bandai closing its doors, like during my first year starting, I thought like, oh man, you know, are we just staying above water? But, you know, having been here for 4 years, I see a steady amount of growth, but it's not like a giant boom. Yeah. It's like people are streaming and a lot of people are streaming more. But our sales are doing pretty good as well.
Right. Okay. And for you, for Aniplex, what's a hit? How many units? You don't have to give us, like, name of show unit sales, but can you give us a rough estimate of, like, how many units does Aniplex sell of a show that they consider a hit?
I'm trying to think if we could give, like, official numbers.
Well, it could just be a, like I said, rough estimate. Like in general, are you talking like 2,000, 3,000? Is that a hit? You know, something like that.
I would have to say like, are we talking just a title in itself, or are we talking like a specific, like, you know, if it's just Blu-rays or DVDs?
Just say like you have like one of your standard, really like a Sword Art Online or a Kill la Kill, you know, a Blu-ray, a soundtrack, postcards, the box, you know, that's sort of the prototypical Aniplex release, right? Or like the Madoka movie, you know, like that kind of release. What kind of sales numbers, like what's your target on that kind of a thing for you to consider it a success?
Let's see. Well, if I had to give an example for Sword Art, our first volume going down the line, volume one, limited edition, Blu-ray and limited edition, standard edition, Blu-ray and DVD, like those three together, around 5,000 units for the first volume. That was pretty good.
That's actually great for anime. That's excellent.
you know, and it's different too, because we're not trying to sell at the Best Buys or the local stores. It's more trying to sell like online or through like, you know, official anime retailers, stuff like that.
Right.
So it's more difficult trying to get it to the mass market.
Yeah, well, it just sounds like what the strategy you've come up with is you're selling to hardcore American otaku who have expendable income that really want to own a nice version of this show, and otherwise you make the shows available free streaming. So if Correct. You just want to watch it, you can just watch it.
Yeah, I mean, we're not like strangling it, like, oh, unless you pay, you have to see it. Nah, it's, you could see it online, Netflix, Hulu, Crunchyroll, Daisuke, and then even Crackle too.
Right, Crackle. Yes, who can forget?
Yeah.
right. So I did want to mention this. You brought up Durarara, and so you said like, you know, there was a lot of clamor for a sequel back then. There's one out now. Obviously, it's airing now. And you guys have decided to do a simulcast dub. And I have a few questions about that franchise. But what made you decide to get into the simul dub game? Was it just sort of following Funimation's lead on that one?
It's not following Funimation's lead. We saw there was a demand for it. We tried it out when we... When we released the first season, because the first season's been out on DVD for a while, but we tried the first season on dub on our streaming channels and saw that like a lot of the fans like watching it dub streaming.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, add that in along with Funimation's doing a simul dub, you know, Space Dandy, and they're like, the Double Talk Wednesdays.
Right.
You know, we thought, let's give it a chance.
Sure. And can you tell us like a little bit about that? Are you involved at all in that process, that whole, you know, creatively or anything like that?
Once we get the word, our producers take care of it.
Right.
And it's really me and the marketing team to promote it and hype it up as much as we can.
Right. And so that leads to my next question on this in particular. So the sequel to Durarara doesn't seem like it's being particularly well received. I know it's underperforming in Japan in terms of disc sales. Is there a concern? Because I know the plan was like three more 12 or 13 episode seasons, and you guys are going the extra mile and simul dubbing it. Are the numbers that you're seeing from the simul dub streams, can you share with us whether or not those numbers so far are justifying the expense and the risk of doing this, or are the numbers so far maybe a little bit of a letdown?
Well, for us, since the dub is only about maybe five or six episodes deep,
right,
it's still a little too early to say.
Right.
You're correct. Like, Durarara, the sequel, like, it's hard to catch on, especially since it like just jumps into the series and not give it a little intro. But it's still performing well enough that, you know, we're still like working on it.
So it's not going to get canceled.
No, we're not. It's not like we're going to can it.
Okay.
It's like, we're trying a simuldub. We're not trying a simuldub. We'll just leave that alone now.
Well, I mean, I meant like the show itself at this point. Like those disc numbers are kind of dire. They're not good. It's doing a little poorly. Do you think just too much time passed? Like they waited too long?
It has been 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, like, the hardcore fans are still there. But definitely we need to pick up fans to, like, see the first season and then see the second season and go, oh.
Right, yeah, yeah. It's a complicated narrative, you know, a lot of characters.
Yeah, I mean, the way I describe it is, like, the Pulp Fiction of anime.
Sure.
Like, multiple stories, one city, all in the one.
Right. Fewer, a little less heroin use, but otherwise. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I haven't seen the sequel, so, you know, maybe. I don't know. okay, so what can we look forward to before we get to Twitter questions here? And we got plenty of them. What can we look forward to in the next couple of months? I know, obviously, you're probably making some announcements at Anime Expo this year, but we just had SakuraCon, so what's to look forward to over the next few months?
SakuraCon, we announced the brand new anime called The Asterix War. Mm-hmm. That one's coming out in fall. A lot of promotions we're promoting heavily this year. We're doing stuff for Aonoha Zero, Fate Stay Night, Sword Art Online 2. We're definitely promoting those. And definitely keep an eye out. We got some exciting stuff for both Anime Expo, Otakon this year, and maybe some surprises down the line too.
Right. Okay. How big a push are you planning for the irregular at Magic High School? Is that going to be a? Am I going to have to see, you know, a million press releases for that one? Is that?
we're releasing it on Blu-ray now.
Right.
It's definitely one of the titles we like to push. So you'll see some of that as well this year too.
Were the sales numbers for that, because your selection process, which is definitely something I wanted to ask about, were the sales numbers for that show in particular strong enough in Japan? Like why that show? I guess if you could use that as a case study for why a show is selected for release by you in the States.
With that one, you know, all the deals are made before it even starts streaming.
Right.
And, you know, we weigh in the factors like, you know, is this a good story? Who stars in it and stuff like that. Some of the factors that we consider for our releases too is the streaming numbers, you know, how's it going? Is it really popular here in the U.S.? And like, do the numbers justify it? And the Irregular Magic High School was one of them that proved, yeah, you know, it could sell in the U.S.
Right. So the streaming numbers mean a lot in terms of that. Is that sort of you're sort of using those like TV ratings? Like,
yeah.
All right. Interesting. Yeah. It seems like everyone's kind of doing that now, where you basically have the internet serves as your quote unquote sort of cable channel, so to speak. And then, you know, you look at those numbers and then decide on those numbers what's going to stream. Although Aniplex's releases in particular seem like no-brainers most of the time. It's like the obvious mega hits. Like, these are the big shows. I mean, obviously it makes sense from a business perspective that you want the, you know, the biggest stuff. But you guys don't really seem like you take a lot of risks, I guess.
Yeah. Definitely, like, we're trying. We try to put out like most of our titles. Silver Spoon's out there. We also try to, what else do we put out? Vivid Red. Not all our titles like are like the no brainers.
Right. Yeah.
but we definitely try to put out as much as we can. But yeah, it, it's hard too to put out everything. Going back, like our manpower too. In our company, we only have 10 people.
Right. Yeah, it's a skeleton crew over there.
Yeah. So we have, you know, 2 producers, 2 marketers, an accountant, and then licensing, 1 for merchandise. So, like, we definitely work as a team to make sure, like, all of our releases get out, like, as soon as possible.
Right. Right. Okay. Can you share with us at all something that underperformed? You know, like, well, we thought this would do better than this, and unfortunately, it just didn't quite go.
Vivid Red.
Okay. All right. I think in general, people thought that show was going to be a bigger hit than it turned out to be.
Yeah, we would think so too. You know, same people, same person who made Sky Witches.
Right.
And yeah, we would thought it'd be like up there, and all of a sudden, like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Fans didn't really react to it. All right. So let's go ahead and get to some of these Twitter questions, because we got a lot of them. We got a few questions about reprints, since a lot of your stuff is out of print. Specifically, Read or Die, the TV series and the OVA, Kenshin, Trust and Betrayal, and the Garden of Sinners movie series. Are you planning reprints on any of those?
On any of those? Not at this time. Those are strong titles. But it's up to, like, we have to consult with our Japan office to see, like, is it, like, viable? Can we, like, release these? If I had to say if any title had a chance, I would probably say Garden of Sinners.
Right. I mean, that was your Aniplex's original release, Aniplex of America's original release, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very strong seller. Like, it did surprisingly well, especially considering it was like $8 billion or whatever it was you were charging for it. So yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. The Blu-ray was one of the first imports we brought over from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did a domestic release of, the DVD, of the movies on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, definitely if I had to put my, like, if there was one title we would, like, try and bring back, it would probably be Garden of Sinners.
Okay, but nothing planned right now?
Not right now.
Okay. Invalid Name asks, will there be more CDs from Aniplex, like the Kill la Kill OST? He says he particularly would love the Meikaku City Actors soundtrack, for example.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We have the Out Noah Zero soundtrack out right now.
Right.
So we're definitely trying to bring more soundtracks in if it's not part of the, like, limited edition sets.
Okay. All right. Roots of Justice asks, what are the odds of a Samurai Flamenco dub happening?
Samurai Flamenco dub?
Yeah. Sounds like not good.
Not good right now. Okay. I mean, never say never, but it's also one of those things we got to consider when it first got released. How was it popular? And stuff like that. But yeah, it's not looking good right now.
Okay. Also wants to know if you are planning at all on releasing the Rurouni Kenshin TV series, either on DVD or Blu-ray or in any form.
Not this time. It's only available streaming right now.
Right. Yeah. You could, speaking of Crackle, you could put that, you could put that amazing dub that Sony made. Everyone would love it.
Yeah. Besides Crackle, it's also on Crunchyroll and Hulu.
Okay, great. also from Invalid Name, any particular reason to announce things using live streams rather than convention appearances?
We do both. Not only do we do, like, announcements on live streams, we also do announcements at conventions as well. I mean, the reason we make announcements on live streams is we try to get the news out faster, like, as soon as possible. Say, for example, like, our next con is within a month, but we want to let everyone know now, you know, so we try to plan a live stream to get it, like, to the fans as soon as possible.
Right.
I mean, and also too, like, we do make announcements at conventions, and then when we make the announcement at conventions, you know, it reaches, like, you know, so many people in the room, and then it gets the news release. We try with these live streams to get out more to the like mass audience who wants to watch.
Yeah.
So try to get it to more people like faster.
Yeah, I've always, for a long time I've wondered why anime companies still do the convention announcement, because you're going to get a much wider audience just doing it on a live stream.
Yeah.
You know, you can only fit 300 people or 400 people, whatever, in a convention room, and there's only a few thousand people there, you know. Maybe in the case of like AX, I guess this year they're expecting a crazy amount of people. But even then, the venue's only so big, and you're relying on the press in the room to cover it for you. Whereas a live stream, you're just getting it out there in front of as many eyeballs as could possibly be on it at once. So I'm curious to know, like, when is this industry finally going to start walking away from the convention announcement? It just seems like an old way of doing things that people just like, have like being in a room with excited people, and that's fun. But, you know, I don't know.
It's always fun to see the excited people.
Right.
And, you know, and it's more of the hopes, like, that the minute they announce it, all of a sudden, like, social networks blows up. They start tweeting, I heard it first.
Right.
You know, because, you know, everyone wants to hear it first.
Of course, it's a double-edged sword, because then you announce something. You're like, hey, we're putting out World Conquest Zvezda Plot. And everyone's like, all right. and you're like, well, can you guys like cheer or clap or something, you know, whatever. I don't know if that was popular or not. I'm just, you know, throwing one out there. But
no, I feel you. And also depends like on the city too.
Yeah, sure.
You know, you go to like one convention, say you go to AX, everyone's like, yeah,
right.
You know, you go to another city, you make an announcement, everyone's just like small clapping, like,
yeah,
oh, that's great,
that's,
you know,
nice.
Golf clap, like,
yeah right, yeah, the little golf clap. Yeah. Have you noticed at all that like East Coast audiences are way more enthusiastic and rowdy than West Coast?
No, I think it's about the same.
You think so? But, all right.
Yeah, like I see two examples of pretty like enthusiastic crowds. Los Angeles, that's for sure. And then New York.
Right.
New York's very enthusiastic. It all depends where you go, really. You know, like, I went to KauaiCon, and, you know, everyone there is, like super relaxed and laid back. So it's more of a, woo, you know.
Yeah, right. Right, yeah. Okay. Roots of Justice asks, what are the odds of seeing some of Aniplex's older streaming catalog shows getting disc runs? So I guess stuff that's not necessarily the new hotness, but has been streaming for a while, coming out on disc. It sounds like this is all a ratings thing, like you were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely one of those. And it's also like, you know, if the fans are asking for it, you know, if we see a lot of fans like asking for it, then we'll see if we could try and bring it. But like usually with catalog titles, we hear a lot of people saying, oh, it's been out there, you know, like, oh, I could just stream it already.
Right.
Stuff like that. Let's see. It's a possibility. But I can't think of any titles right now that would probably like, oh, we might bring that back.
Right. Okay. Let's see. Mike Tool asks, any plans to start pushing your movies, like Anohana, the Madoka movies, to streaming services? Or is that disc only for now?
Right now it's disc only. Also theater only as well.
Okay. Right. Yeah, you guys had some real success with the third Madoka movie. Obviously there's more theatrical plans, like, in the works, right? I mean...
hopefully. I mean, Madoka is still a good seller. I still see cosplayers all over the place for Madoka. The way the third one ended, cross your fingers if a fourth one comes out.
Well, I know that third movie made a lot of money, so of course they're probably going to make more. I mean, they keep threatening with that one, right? They're like, well, there's room for more, and you're kind of like, I don't know, it kind of seems like you've milked the story dry, and they're like, nope, there's still more milk in these things, like, you know.
But,
we'll see.
I mean, hopefully, I'm not going to lie, when I, like, when I first started Aniplex, they were like, all right, one of your research tiles you have to check out is Modica Magica. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, okay, what's, and then, you know, I'm like, you know, spoiler alert. Well, once I hit the third episode, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Whoa, whoa.
Do you, is that the biggest success that Aniplex of America has had?
One of the biggest.
What is the biggest? Can you share that?
One of the biggest, it's a tight race between, you know, Modica, Sword Art. Both have been really successful.
Okay. Right. I mean, it stands to reason. It's just...
Yeah. You know, like Modica with its popularity, Sword Art with its, like, you know, general appeal.
Sure.
I mean, we were way excited when we found out, like, Sword Art got on to Toonami. We're like, oh, wow. It's going on Toonami.
Were you surprised at all that the stuff in Sword Art Online that maybe we would sit back and go, you know, I'm not sure an American audience is really going to cotton to this, that it just didn't, they didn't get a single even complaint about, like, the stuff that happens in Sword Art Online that maybe you wouldn't normally see in an American television show?
Stuff like that. Well, thankfully it's, like, late at night and not, like, a mid-afternoon time slot. You know, where you could get away with stuff like that. But it was surprising to not hear, like any, like, major complaints.
Yeah.
And stuff. And it's another thing, too, with Cartoon Network. They would definitely preview it before, like, putting it on the air. And then they would express concerns if there was anything, like, anything iffy.
Right. Okay. Zeruda wants to know why you didn't try for an Oscar campaign on Expelled from Paradise for Best Animated Film. I mean, is that ever worth your time, really?
We try.
Really?
Okay. Like, we try, but, for example, stuff like, to even enter in the Oscars, you have to, like, fill out a packet and, like, submit everything. So... it was a big deal. Our main concern with Expelled from Paradise is making sure, like, it was well received by fans.
Right.
You know, it had no, like, anime background. It was a totally original story, and it wasn't, like, done like normal animation. It was done like 3D CG.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, that's not out. That's not out on Blu-ray yet. But I mean, those theatrical screenings. I mean, was there ever a plan in place to expand that to more theaters? Like, if it was hugely successful, would it have just kept running? Or did it kind of do what you thought it was going to do, and then that was it?
It kind of did what we thought we did.
Mm-hmm.
It had some impressive numbers. But, like you mentioned, if it was doing, like, better, we would have tried for more theaters. And it's not necessarily our choice, too. It's also, like, the theater's choice.
Yeah, sure.
So we say, hey, can you show it? And theater's like, oh, I'm not sure.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, it's as an original property, it's a tough sell.
Yeah.
Like, Funimation has no problem getting Dragon Ball Z in theaters. But a completely original project, yeah, it's a little tougher.
For sure. So, yeah, definitely. If you have something with, like, a strong history, that'll definitely, like, theaters will pick it up. But with us, it's definitely trying to sell, like, you know... Yeah, it's all, you know, 3D CG, it's a new story. The guy who made it, like, makes really great stories.
Right. Yeah, but only the, you know, hardcore otaku love that guy. No one else knows who he is. So that's a tough sell.
We try, man. We try.
Yeah, you do. All right. Big on Anime wants to know if you're bringing back chipboard boxes. I got a lot of people complaining about your new boxes, which are not chipboard. They are cardboard or whatever that is, like cardstock. Are you thinking about going back? Is that sort of the new normal? Is this new? It's a little flimsier.
With chipboard boxes, we are bringing it back. People were asking us for Sword Art 2, if they're going to be the same as Sword Art 1 boxes. We are bringing chipboard boxes for Sword Art 2.
Okay.
So it's not like we're totally, like, shunning chipboard. It's more like, we saw chipboard boxes as like one of our options, and we tried to see how the market would receive, like, you know, other materials. So we tried the other boxes, and, you know, we're all going back to the chipboard, and, you know, who knows, we might bring those metal cases back.
Right. Yeah.
You know, those tins where you know they're two piecers,
right?
You know,
yeah.
Like it's just one of the options. So we're definitely bringing, for those who are asking about it, we are bringing it back.
Okay. All right. But obviously not across the board, but for Sword Art.
Yeah. Select titles.
Right. Okay. He also wants to know why you didn't include the key animation booklets in your release of Kill la Kill. I believe those were in the Japanese release.
Well, this all part comes down with like the negotiations with the consortium.
Mm-hmm.
It's a give and take. So, for example, a little like insider, there were some materials we wanted to put into the like Modica releases.
Yeah.
And stuff like original content or like original items. But unfortunately, we had to negotiate them like as not part of it, like since like the consortium couldn't agree on it.
That sounds kind of frustrating.
It is, because, you know, we try our best to, like, you know, give the fans something they're like, oh, hells yeah, you know, and then it's a give and take. So we throw our ideas out there, and then, like, hopefully some of them will catch.
Right. Well, it sounds like you spend a lot of time, like, your chief thing is you try to – the release that you're putting out is heavily negotiated version that complies with what Aniplex of Japan wants and is in their business interest. Like, it's very much like this is the release that they were cool with, and that's it.
Yeah. We tried our best. You know, it's one of those things like...
Well, yeah, you're fighting for the best thing you can put out, but ultimately, your product is what they were cool with.
Yeah. Everyone has to agree.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Which sounds like an enormous headache, so I don't really, I don't really envy you. But that does lead me to another question, which is, so for a while now, the Aniplex Special Edition, the Aniplex Limited Edition, is a box, one of those little slipcover thingies, some postcards, maybe a little art book, sometimes there's an interview, a soundtrack CD, and that's generally it. Is there any thought on moving away from postcards or a little art booklet into another kind of premium?
Yeah. One of our producers is trying that now with the Maggie releases. Instead of a postcard set, they're trying to bring like the plastic, like plastic illustration boards.
Oh, okay. Right. Pencil boards. I remember.
Yeah.
Those.
The pencil boards. So they're trying to bring those with the Maggie releases and see how those go. We'll probably see a couple more foil stamps in the upcoming releases. We're trying that. We do see everyone like sees like, you know, our format, and yeah, our producers are trying to change it up.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I mean, you know, postcards are nice and everything, but, I guess doing that sort of over and over again, maybe the people buying your releases, the people dropping lots of money, you know, maybe want to change the scenery or something.
Yeah.
We got a lot of questions about that.
Yeah. We try to bring something fresh.
Cool. Okay, so last question. This guy's presuming that you passed on these shows, but basically saying, since you passed on Dog Days, Nanoha Vivid, and Seven Deadly Sins, are they open for other companies to license? So I guess the first question is, did you pass on those shows?
It's not like we passed on those shows. Other companies are still bidding, and it's up to the consortium for that show to decide, you know, like, oh, this company provided this much, but this company provided this much, you know, which is the best route.
So those shows are still being bid on, Seven Deadly Sins included?
stuff like that. I can't say for Seven Deadly Sins.
Okay, that's what I thought. Because there's this thing going around, everyone assumes Netflix has it, and there's been no confirmation of that at all. And it's like, well, if companies are still bidding, then that confirms Netflix does not have this. So that's sort of the road I was going down on that one. But, yeah.
Yeah. Nah, more for a general example.
Right. Okay. All right. So those are still being bid on, and it's not like you passed on them. It's just right now it's not in your portfolio.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's more like, you know, we put our bid, but I guess the bid wasn't that favorable, so they're looking for other options.
Okay. All right. So we will likely not see that show come out from you.
Seven Deadly. Doesn't seem like it right now.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, that actually wraps us up. That's all the questions we had. And I want to thank you so much for your time. And good luck with the con circuit this summer. I know you're busy traveling all over the country for that, and it gets real bad during the summertime.
Yeah, this month it's going to be pretty crazy, especially July. You have AX, San Diego Comic-Con, and Otakon within weeks of each other.
Yeah, it's always the way.
But yeah, thank you so much for having me. I was surprised to hear that a lot of fans wanted to interview me for the cast, for the podcast.
Yeah, that's you're the guy, right?
Yeah, I'm the guy.
somebody says Aniplex, your face pops into their head. That's how it goes.
I appreciate it, man. And yeah, if can I do a plug-in and stuff?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, if fans want to reach out to us, they could hit us up on Facebook @AniplexUSA. They could also hit us up at Twitter, AniplexUSA, or check out our website at AniplexUSA.com.
Excellent. All right, man. Thank you very much for your time.
Hey, thanks so much, Zach.
Okay, that's our show. Huge thanks to EJ for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, a review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.